Football Weekly is on the air.
They got one safety deep. Austin to the left, Williams to the right, shotgun 13-14. They only rush four. Deep fade Austin, all alone, 25, 20, raise to 15, 10, 5, miles and miles and miles to go.
They're in the red zone now. Shotgun snaps to Rivers. Looking, launching, end zone. It is caught! Touchdown! Vincent Jackson! 21 seconds to go! An extra point will give the Chargers the lead at the Meadowlands!
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, the headliner in Week 10, Tom Brady and the Patriots against Peyton Manning and the Colts.
The natives are restless in Green Bay and Seattle. Is the front office and the coaching staff in trouble?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly, and this week we begin in the NFC West with executive editor Dan Arkish. Dan, the Arizona Cardinals, up and down a little bit this year. You get the feeling there's an undercurrent of unhappiness on this football team. The injury to Anquan Boldin, is it all starting to add up as we get through the midseason?
Well, certainly in the case of Anquan Boldin, Wayne, a problem has developed. Before the Bear game, he was warming up on the Soldier Field turf, and he was telling people that his injured right ankle, the one that had been injured the last 3 weeks, was feeling as good as it has for a long time. And then he goes into the locker room only to find that his stuff had been cleaned out and that he had been deactivated, and he got very upset about it and made his feelings known. He had a face-to-face with Wisenhunt. He didn't look his head coach in the eye, and other players saw this, and the fact that the Cardinals had beaten the Bears by 20 points, and here Anquan Boldin was being selfish and sulking, did not sit well. It's the same deal as last year at the NFC Championship victory when he had a hissy fit late because he didn't like the way he was used down the stretch. And the bottom line, I think, is that they've had enough already with him. And the fact that they're 5-1 the past two seasons when he hasn't played probably hastens his departure that much more.
You know, Dan, it's interesting. He has a reputation as a fairly classy guy, certainly a guy who will play with pain and certainly a guy who's given his best in spite of his unhappiness with the contract. But one other piece of that I was told, I was covering that game, and someone in the Cardinal locker room indicated to me that one, I don't know if it was Wisenhunt, but one of the coaches did approach him before he went out to warm up to tell him that they were considering deactivating him and that he turned his back on him and didn't listen and walked away. So it's not that no one told him, it's just that apparently he wasn't being very cooperative all day long.
Right, and this is a guy who the players generally respect a great deal because he's an excellent player when he's healthy, but he has just made his... the fact that he's unhappy with his contract, he's just sulked at the poorest times. And because they have younger receivers now, like Early Dissett and Steve Breston, that's really developed, I think they can probably look for a way out for Boldin.
Dan, the Green Bay Packers are 4-4 coming off a loss to winless Tampa Bay, and that certainly has rankled the natives and the media as well in Green Bay.
Absolutely, Wayne. I think the heat was starting to build after they lost to the Vikings for the second time. And, of course, with Brett Favre under center, that made matters worse. And then to lose to Tampa Bay, that really just kind of probably put Ted Thompson and McCarthy on notice up there in Green Bay to the point where I would think this game Sunday, it's not make or break, but it's really huge because they need to step it up and show that they're better than what they've shown. I mean, especially everybody's talked about the offensive line, which has obviously been a disaster, but their special teams and their defense, which has not generated nearly enough pressure, have both been major disappointments.
You know, still, guys, when you look at the GM, they do strike me as a team with a lot of young talent. They're going to have to replace aging cornerbacks. They've obviously got to get better on the offensive line, but it's not as if Thompson has been a complete bust in bringing players in there.
I would agree with that. I mean, you look at Clay Matthews, Wayne, I would think you would agree he's obviously a good-looking young player on the come. B.J. Raji, the verdict is probably out a little bit more on him because he's had ankle problems. But they've got some good young talent. They still are, I think, maybe the youngest team going. And their offense has actually been really good, except for the obvious offensive line problems.
Yeah, you know, and again, the defense, as one scout told me before this whole thing began, when they hired Dom Capers to put in the 3-4 defense, he said, now, Wayne, this is not a like taking a pill and everything's better. It takes time to develop that kind of a defense and to get the right people in it. And I think that's what we're seeing here on the defensive side of the football. The offensive line, however, guys, is where there's been major disappointment on some of the younger players, like an Allen Barber, like a Darren College that Ted Thompson drafted. And this has been a major disappointment. They started that game at Tampa with Chad Clifton back at left tackle and Mark Tauscher, whom they signed during the season, coming off an ACL surgery at right tackle. And Tauscher was unable to finish the game, went down with a knee injury, and probably won't play against Dallas this week. So the major disappointment has been on the offensive line, but also the quarterback looking downfield hasn't been getting rid of the football as quickly as they would like. So there are some adjustments that have to be made. And you guys are exactly right. Mike McCarthy himself basically admitted this week that this game against Dallas, as good as Dallas is, this game is a must-win for the Green Bay Packers. Let's move on to Seattle, where the media is up in arms in Seattle, but it's not the coach they're after. They're after the GM. Tell us about that, Dan.
Well, there's one sports talk radio station out there in particular that's on a little bit of a crusade suggesting that Tim Ruskell, the GM, who's in the final year of his contract, that his time has come. And, of course, recently, just late this past week, when the Cleveland Browns suggested that they might be interested in ex-Seahawk head coach and Packer head coach Mike Holmgren, the people out in Seattle said, wait a minute, why don't we just bring him here, bring him back as a GM? You know, he failed in that role earlier, but he thinks he's learned a lot, and that, you know, he would probably be a decent fit out there. Ruskell has done some good things, but going back to the fact that he let Steve Hutchinson go a few years ago to Minnesota with a transition tag snafu, it's been downhill for him really ever since then.
Thank you very much, Dan. When we come back, we'll have more news and notes around the National Football League when The Way We Hear It continues on Pro Football Weekly. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. And we bring in editor Mike Wilkening, executive editor Mike Wilkening. Cleveland Browns situation, they're back to Brady Quinn at quarterback. Mike, where does this leave them now heading into the game with the Ravens?
Well, it leaves them with 8 games to evaluate Brady Quinn going forward. And it's going to be, you know, I think a very sort of interesting to see how this plays out. Now, as we know, Derek Anderson really struggled in his 5.5 games in the lineup. Quinn pulled after only 10 quarters. Eric Mangini is... You indicated the quote is not looking to change, unquote, again at the position, but this is the third time they've kind of switched quarterbacks this season. It should be interesting to see how it plays out.
You know, Mike, the other big story in Cleveland are these rumors everywhere that Randy Lerner is seeking out Mike Holmgren to possibly come in and take over his organization. Now, these guys have become too easy a punchline, and I don't want to make light of the situation, but the idea, A, that Mike Holmgren is the best choice for a GM job as opposed to coaching responsibilities, and B, that he would do that and come in there and coexist with Eric Mangini, I find somewhat laughable. But you know the Browns better than I do. Any more insight on that story?
Well, I think what we know is clearly they're looking to hire a football executive to kind of oversee the entire operation. Someone of the mold of Holmgren that has some experience, that has some name, value, cachet, the ability to lead an organization. I think that's what they're looking for. I don't know if it's Holmgren per se, but you're right, Hub. I think the major issue, no matter what they do with this position, is can this person work hand-in-hand with Eric Mangini? And, you know, from all accounts, it looks like Randy Lerner wants to bring back Eric Mangini next year. Now, whether or not that happens remains to be seen. But again, a lot of moving parts here. And clearly, they're going to be adding to this organizational structure in terms of adding somebody over the head coach.
Yeah, and that's hard to do. It's hard to add somebody in the key position in a football operation over the head coach. Usually the head coach is that man's responsibility and decision. Thank you very much, Mike. Associate Editor Dan Parr joins us, Denver. All right, Dan, the Broncos are coming back to earth. We all knew this would happen. They've lost two games in a row, and now mercurial wide receiver Brandon Marshall. Is the honeymoon over with him?
I wouldn't say quite yet. I think those two games are, you know, going to be a bit of an obstacle for the Broncos to overcome here in the second half of the season. But by all accounts, Brandon Marshall has kind of put his disagreements with the organization to the side for the time being, and they probably won't see them crop up again until the offseason, and they could come back strongly at that point. Now, I'm not sure we're going to see the same kind of tactics Marshall was using earlier in the year when he was disrupting practice and ended up being suspended from the team. But I do think that neither party has really changed its view on how they feel about each other about for the long term. I don't think the Broncos are going to need to give him a long-term extension. He's going to be a restricted free agent unless there's a breakthrough in collective bargaining agreements. And it's going to be a one-year tender probably for Brandon Marshall, and there's been no sign that he's interested in signing any short-term deal.
Dan, one local columnist actually wrote, I guess the other day, and I'm not even going to name the columnist because I thought it was so ludicrous, that now Kyle Orton should be benched and Chris Sims should get a chance. That, of course, is silly. Anybody who thought that Kyle Orton was Jay Cutler was kidding themselves coming in. But the question would be, is the honeymoon really going to be that short for Josh McDaniels? Like, the 6-0 start didn't buy as much goodwill as we thought it would?
Maybe that's the case. I do agree with you that Colin was off base. I don't think the people are willing to completely disregard that start, though. I think that McDaniels did build up a lot of, you know, positive credit with a lot of people, and deservedly so. I think this team was, you know, he got a lot of that defense early in the early going, and I think that while the Chargers are creeping up on him, I think it's too quick to kind of dismiss the Broncos as kind of a pretender. I do think McDaniels has done a very good job and deserves a little bit more respect than perhaps he's getting from some locals right now.
Dan, thank you very much. So the honeymoons continue. Brandon Marshall puts his differences aside, and they're still happy with the coach after the start they got off to. 6-2 is not bad the first half of the season in Denver, especially with the expectations as low as they were. Meanwhile, senior editor Eric Edholm is with us in studio. All right, Eric, that Washington Redskins Atlanta Falcons fracas on the sidelines. Fines have been issued. What's the latest over there?
Well, yeah, they've issued fines on the Redskins side to LaRon Landry, Albert Hainsworth, the two guys who sort of came in late, and D'Angelo Hall, surprise, surprise, the guy who was in the middle of things there in the fight. And, you know, Landry had the late hit out of bounds on Matt Ryan as he was scrambling towards the sideline. And then out of nowhere, Hall comes in and sort of gets in the middle of it. And Atlanta coach Mike Smith was there, and it was sort of a surprising thing. You saw a sea of Falcons players and Hall right in the middle of things, not shocking against his old team, one that he sort of left with some bad feelings with. So, yeah, I think the aftermath that Hall was sort of calling out for his teammates to help him. You know, Hainsworth was the first guy over there, and you know, he felt like nobody else had his back. But, you know, one of the few voices of reason, it seems, in that locker room, Philip Daniels said, look, if more guys came over there, we would have had an uglier situation. So kind of interesting to see that there weren't a lot of people helping Hall out, and also Daniels saying, look, it's better that guys weren't flying over to that sideline.
Thank you very much, Eric. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned. We've got the games next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, the Giants and Texans have the week off, while Chicago and San Francisco play Thursday night. As usual, we focus on the Sunday and Monday games in the NFL. It's Week 10, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers finally ended an 11-game losing streak that dated back to last year. They did it with a 38-28 victory over the Green Bay Packers. Rookie quarterback Josh Freeman made a successful starting debut, passing for 3 touchdowns in the come-from-behind effort. They take on the Dolphins this week in Miami. The Dolphins have lost 2 of their last 3, coming off a 27-17 defeat at New England. Dolphins feature the Wildcat, and the Bucs defend with a rush defense that gives up over 160 yards a game on the ground. Look for Ronnie Brown or Ricky Williams to take advantage. Bucs haven't scored more than 21 points in a game prior to last week this season, and then they scored 21 points in the fourth quarter alone to nip the Packers. This is the Dolphins' only home game in a segment of their schedule that has them playing 4 out of 5 on the road. The Minnesota Vikings get back to work as they host the Detroit Lions. The Vikings beat the Lions in Week 2, 27-13. Detroit's lost 24 of its last 25 games. The Vikings have won 7 of their first 8 games this season and have firm control over the NFC North Division. Rookie quarterback Matthew Stafford for Detroit going through the usual ups and downs that plague a quarterback playing before his time. He threw 5 picks last week at Seattle. The Vikings have just too much firepower in this game, Hub, on both sides of the ball to stumble at home coming off a bye week over the lowly Lions.
Wayne, the Buffalo Bills visit the Tennessee Titans this weekend, and hopefully for the Bills, this is not everything you need to know about this game. But Tennessee comes into the game second in the NFL rushing the football. The Bills are dead last stopping the run. Turn it around, the Titans' Achilles heel. They've been 31st in pass defense. That was before they got Courtland Finnegan back at cornerback. The Bills just 29th throwing the football. Now, one piece of good news for the Bills, they do get Trent Edwards back from his concussion. Whether he can now grab the starting quarterback job and hold on to it remains to be seen. Chris Johnson for the Titans is on fire. He has carried the ball 49 times for 363 yards and 4 touchdowns in his last 2 games. That could be the story of this one for the Titans. I've also got the New Orleans Saints visiting the St. Louis Rams. And again, classic mismatches here. The Saints are first in the league in scoring. Rams defense 29th in points allowed. However, the Saints have struggled a little bit lately. Drew Brees has committed 8 turnovers in his last 3 games. The defense for New Orleans has scored 7 touchdowns. That's how they're getting a lot of things done. And we know Steven Jackson is number one in the NFC, or at least tied with Adrian Peterson in rushing. The Saints have allowed 480 rushing yards in the last 3 games. Do the Rams rise up at home and shock the Saints here? A little tough to see, but that running game could be the difference.
Boy, I tell you, Hub, as impressive as Drew Brees has been, that Darren Sharper, he is ageless. What a ball hawk. In what used to be the glamour rivalry of the AFL, the Kansas City Chiefs head to Oakland to take on the Oakland Raiders. It used to be that these games decided the AFC West title. This week, the two teams bring a combined 3-13 record into the game, so this contest might decide who dwells in the cellar this year. Oakland won at Kansas City Week 2, 13-10, and are going for a sweep for the first time since 2001 over their arch rivals. In the first meeting, however, Kansas City outgained Oakland 409-166 in yardage, but couldn't put the ball in the end zone enough to win. The Chiefs cut troubled running back Larry Johnson earlier this week. Without him, Hub, Kansas City has really struggled to run the football. They had just 60 yards rushing on 14 plays last week in the loss at San Diego.
When the Denver Broncos come off that Monday night's loss to the Steelers, taking a trip to the nation's capital to take on the Redskins. And one thing they might be a little concerned about, the Redskins are actually the best pass defense in the NFL. The Broncos just 16th throwing the football. And, of course, Kyle Orton really struggled last Monday night. You flip it around, though, the Redskins, all kinds of problems on offense. The Broncos, the number one overall defense in the NFL. This is the match they like. Now, you got the problem of them traveling through a couple time zones. Here's another thing that should help, though. I mentioned that Washington offense struggling. They're 29th in the league in scoring. Broncos second in points allowed. And here's the big mismatch. The Broncos are 6th in the league in turnover takeaway ratio. The Redskins just 29th. Now, one other thing to keep an eye on in this ballgame, Elvis Dumervil tied for the NFL lead with 10.5 quarterback sacks for the Broncos. The Redskins have allowed 11 sacks in their last 2 games. Jason Campbell, buckle up your helmet for this one.
Mm-hmm. Baltimore Ravens look to get back on track as they take on the Cleveland Browns Monday night on the shores of Lake Erie. Baltimore's dropped 4 of 5 games. They're 2 games off the pace in the AFC North. The punchless Browns might be just what the doctor ordered. In Week 3, the Ravens bombed them 34-3, but quarterback Joe Flacco has struggled recently. Last week in Cincinnati, threw a pair of picks and did not record a touchdown pass. The Browns coming off a tumultuous bye week and have appeared in disarray. Brady Quinn back in place of Derek Anderson at quarterback, but they have virtually no playmakers on offense, and against a rugged defense like the Ravens, they don't figure to make many plays this week either. Stay tuned. We've got the big games coming up next, Week 10 on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. A couple of 4-4 teams collide this weekend in the Meadowlands as the New York Jets play host to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, Hub, the question here is, who's the better 4-4? The Jets sprinted to a 3-0 start with wins over Houston, New England, and Tennessee, but they've lost 4 of their last 5. The Jaguars' wins have come at the expense of teams like, well, Houston, Tennessee, St. Louis, and Kansas City.
Well, and here's the interesting answer to the question. Even though the Jets are number one in the NFL running the football, the Jaguars are better at 4-4 on offense because MJD, Maurice Jones-Drew, is the most exciting weapon in the NFL right now with 11 touchdowns. Now, flip it around, though. The Jets, the far superior 4-4 team on defense, they will frustrate a quarterback. They will take away your passing game. They'll create great pressure. And David Garrard has not been the best in the face of great pressure. So really interesting ball game here because the team that wins is very much alive in the wild card hunt. The one that loses is probably looking at next year.
Meanwhile, an NFC South battle is shaping up as the Atlanta Falcons head to Charlotte to take on the Carolina Panthers. Gary McKillops has the story.
The Carolina Panthers made things interesting last week against NFC South leader New Orleans, leading by 11 at the half before losing to the undefeated Saints 30-20. This week, they want to seal the deal against the division's second-place team as they tangle with the 5-3 Atlanta Falcons in Charlotte. Atlanta whipped the Panthers 28-20 in their first meeting of the season, but this is a different Atlanta team than the one that faced Carolina back in September. Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan has struggled of late, throwing 6 interceptions in his last 3 games. Ryan was asked how he'd rate the Falcons' offense at this point in the season.
I think we've done a pretty good job, but still have a lot of improving to do. Myself, you know, included, you know, I feel like we can play better, but this is the time that we want to start peaking.
If Ryan continues his slide, the Falcons will again be looking to running back Michael Turner, who scored touchdowns of 30 and 58 yards in the Falcons' 30-17 win over the Redskins last week. Turner totaled 166 yards against the Skins and 151 yards 2 weeks ago against the Saints. The Panthers sport a 3-5 record on the season, and they too have had problems at quarterback this season. Jake Delhomme has 5 touchdowns and an NFL-high 13 interceptions this year after taking Carolina to the NFC South title in 2008. The Panthers also have several players nicked up going into Sunday's game. Definitely out Sunday and for the rest of the season with an ACL injury is weak side linebacker Thomas Davis, who will be replaced by veteran Landon Johnson. Johnson had this to say on the Panthers' meeting with the Falcons.
They got a tough offense. You know, they got lots of weapons at all positions. You know, they got tight end, got a running back, got receivers that are great guys. They got a big offensive line. But at the same time, we have great guys on our defense as well. And I'm just looking forward to the game.
Big NFC South battle Sunday, Panthers-Falcons in Charlotte. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Gary McKillops reporting.
You know, Wayne, I think the theme of this week's show may be running backs on fire. The thing to keep an eye on here, Michael Turner of the Falcons, 331 yards in his last 2 games, 4 touchdowns. D'Angelo Williams of the Panthers went off for 150 and a couple touchdowns last week as well. But here's the key. The Panthers pretty good against the pass, 23rd in the league against the run, and the injury to that will backer, Thomas Davis, could really hurt them if Michael Turner takes over this football game.
Well, how'd the Dallas Cowboys take a 4-game winning streak into Green Bay, where the Packers feel this is a must-win for them coming off a loss at Tampa Bay? Russell Scott reports.
Despite that, Dallas wide receiver Roy Williams says he does not expect his team to look past the Packers this Sunday afternoon. Williams was expected to be the Cowboys' top wideout, but he's just 4th in receiving yards on the team. Miles Austin has garnered most of the headlines over the past 3 weeks. He's on track for 50 catches and 1,300 yards, but he's also drawing a lot more attention. Last week at Philadelphia, Miles had only 1 catch, but it was a 49-yard touchdown. This week, he'll likely draw attention from Pro Bowl corner Al Harris, who's big and physical and should make for an intriguing matchup. Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo appears to have balanced his gunslinger bus driver mentality. His turnovers are down. He's thrown interceptions in only 3 of 8 games this year. The Packers, on the other hand, are led by quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who's thrown 16 touchdown passes, has passed for more than 2,200 yards, and done all that despite being sacked and NFL-leading 37 times already. Pretty good numbers, all things considered, according to Cowboys linebacker Keith Brooking.
It's amazing that he's put up the numbers that he has with the amount of pressure that teams are getting on him. So he's a special talent. He's a very good football player. He has some weapons on the outside as well.
The Packers' offensive line may be key to this game. Center Scott Walls will have the hardest job handling Cowboys nose tackle Jay Ratliff, who's already accounted for 4 sacks in 8 games. Then, of course, coming off the edge will be last season's NFL sack leader, DeMarcus Ware. It may be just the halfway point of the season, but for the 4-4 Packers, who haven't beaten a team with a winning record yet, losing this game would certainly be a blow to their playoff hopes. And despite getting a full vote of confidence from team president Mark Murphy this week, a loss would also turn up the heat on Green Bay coach Mike McCarthy. I'm Russell Scott reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
Well, Wayne, something to keep an eye on here. Yes, the Cowboys are hot. They're the better team. They probably should win this football game. But other than Terrence Newman, who's probably going to the Pro Bowl, their secondary is suspect. They're 20th against the pass. And the Packers, second in the league in turnover takeaway. The Cowboys, 16th. Aaron Rodgers, uncharacteristically, three picks last week. But if they can avoid the mistakes, this is a game where they may catch the Cowboys napping.
All right, Hub. Analysis of more top games, Seattle at Arizona, Philadelphia, San Diego, and more coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We resume with our preview of the top games in the NFL this weekend. It's week number 10, and hot quarterbacks are at the focal point of an NFC West Division matchup between the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals. Last week, Matt Hasselbeck had his first 300-yard passing game in two seasons in the victory over the Lions, while Kurt Warner threw for five touchdown passes in that win at Chicago. The Cardinals easily handled the Seahawks 27-3 in week six, limiting the Hawks to 128 total yards in just 14 yards on the ground, but you'd expect Seattle have a better effort on the road at Arizona this week.
Well, and the story about the Cardinals, Wayne, is that they've been lousy at home. They've been great on the road. They're, I believe, 4-1 now, and they've really struggled at home. They did play Seattle earlier this year in Seattle and just shut them down on defense. They allowed the Seahawks offense 125 yards of offense. If they get that kind of defensive performance again at home, and if Kurt Warner can avoid those picks, you would think the Cardinals would be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but as strange as it sounds, yeah, the Cardinals haven't been nearly as good at home as they have been on the road. The Philadelphia Eagles, coming off a disappointing loss at home to Dallas, head across the continent to San Diego for an engagement with the 5-3 Chargers. Donna McQuillan has our preview.
It's a cross-country trip for the Eagles to take on the Chargers in San Diego. Both teams are 5-3. The Eagles are coming off a four-point defeat to the Cowboys. Philly tight end Brent Celek says a win this weekend is key.
Well, this is a huge game, especially after losing this last one the way we lost it. This is a game we should win and we need to win.
And Celek explains consistency will be the name of the game in the second half of the season.
When you play so well one week and then you come back and play not so good the next, that's frustrating, and that's what we need to eliminate.
Meanwhile, the Chargers are red hot, winning three straight, including a stunning come-from-behind one-point win over the Giants last weekend. Trailing by 6 points with less than 2 minutes to play, Philip Rivers led his team on an 80-yard touchdown drive, tossing a winning touchdown with 21 seconds left to play. Eagles coach Andy Reid.
I've got a lot of respect for their quarterback. They've got a lot of talent on that football team, both sides of the football, and good coaching. I thought they did a nice job with their two-minute drill at the end of the game there.
And Donovan McNabb explains the Chargers' defense has also stepped up their game.
What they've been doing over the previous probably 3 weeks has really gelled well together and really have elevated their play.
The Eagles, he explains, have to keep an eye out for New Jersey's own Sean Phillips, a marquee player on the Chargers' defense, along with another linebacker, Sean Merriman.
You have to pay attention to where he's at, where Merriman's at, where a lot of those guys at, and just make sure that you know what you're doing.
The Eagles' offensive consistency is also troubling McNabb, but in this game, the quarterback says, his Eagles can begin to put it all together for the stretch run.
Some where it looks crisp and things are looking great, some may not look as good as we want to, but, you know, it's a long season ahead of us. This isn't a sprint, it's a marathon, and we just got to make sure we do the right things as we continue on.
The Eagles are again expecting the return of running back Brian Westbrook. He missed last week's game due to an ankle injury. Donald McQuillan reporting for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, you look at the entire body of work of both these football teams over the first half of the season, the Eagles should win this football game. But there is no more Jekyll and Hyde team in the league than the Eagles, and how they escaped the hangover from that trip to Oakland a couple weeks ago, I'm just not sure. I do know this. I look at Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson and Malcolm Floyd and Vincent Jackson. There could be more fireworks in this game than there will be everywhere else in the league combined this weekend.
No question about it. Meanwhile, the Cincinnati Bengals and Pittsburgh Steelers in a first-place showdown of the AFC North Division this weekend. Both teams come in with 6-2 records, and our preview is provided by Ken Laird.
The lead in the AFC North is at stake Sunday at Heinz Field as 6-2 Cincinnati travels to take on the reigning world champion Pittsburgh Steelers, also at 6-2. And if the Bengals under head coach Marvin Lewis emerge victorious, they will be 5-0 in the division with their first head-to-head sweep of Pittsburgh since 1998, and they'll have a lock on potential tiebreakers down the road. But despite all that, Lewis is doing his best to keep his team's emotions from riding too high.
We still have a lot of football left is what I'm telling our guys, and it's going to be important that what transpires the next 6 weeks after this game as well. And that's really what's going to be the deciding factor on the success of our season.
Well, the Steelers blew an 11-point fourth-quarter lead the first time the teams met back in Week 3. Steelers defensive lineman Chris Hoke said his team isn't looking back. They're looking ahead.
Our goal is to get to the Super Bowl, and they're in our way of getting there, and we want to take these guys down this weekend and keep moving.
That being said, why did the Bengals win the first meeting? Their defense held the Steelers to field goals twice in the red zone. Cornerback Jonathan Joseph returned an interception for a score, and quarterback Carson Palmer led his team 71 yards in the final 5 minutes for the game-winning touchdown with 14 seconds left. Here's Steelers safety Ryan Clark.
You got a guy like Carson, it's kind of like playing against a very good shooter. You know what I mean? You hope they miss. And that's what you do. You know, you cover your guy as well as possible and hope he misses.
Only on that drive, Carson didn't miss, hitting Andre Caldwell from 4 yards away. But it's not just Carson Palmer anymore with the Cincinnati offense. Running back Cedric Benson is on pace for a team record in rushing yards this year. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin is very well aware of what he brings.
You got a guy that's running the ball the way Benson's running the ball. You're going to win a bunch of football games. That's going to be a big challenge for us. He ran through Baltimore pretty good there the other day, and that's not something that you hear said too often.
But as the Bengals' offense is loaded, the Steelers are fifth in the NFL in yards per game themselves, with Ben Roethlisberger leading the Steelers' O, and running back Rashard Mendenhall emerging in his own right. It all makes for quite the rematch Sunday in Pittsburgh, a 1 o'clock kick by the Three Rivers. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Ken Laird.
Wayne, I love hearing Mike Tomlin talk. If anybody sounds like an NFL coach, it's Mike Tomlin. And folks, if you've been sleeping on the Bengals, it's time to wake up. Not only are they much better on offense with Cedric Benson, with Jonathan Joseph and Leon Hall, they may have the best pair of young cornerbacks in the NFL.
Agreed. No question about it. The Cincinnati Bengals are for real. Stay tuned. We've got the headliner, New England and Indianapolis, coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. Sunday Night Football in Indianapolis as the Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts play host to the Tom Brady New England Patriots. This glamour matchup of the NFL is detailed for us by Mike Petrelia.
For the fifth straight November, the Patriots will meet the Colts in a big game that will have likely playoff seeding and home field advantage implications. As a matter of fact, the last time the Colts and the Patriots did not meet in the regular season was 2002. That was when the Patriots were coming off their first Super Bowl title, and the Colts were in the midst of a 10-win season, their first of soon to be 9 straight seasons with double-digit wins. The 8-0 Colts come in as one of two unbeatens in the NFL along with the Saints, while the 6-2 Patriots are finding their groove, having won 3 straight and standing in first place by 2 games over the Jets in the AFC East. While this game is often regarded as an offensive show, this year could be different. Colts lead the NFL in fewest points allowed at 108, while the Patriots are second at 115. Still, when you talk the Patriots and Colts, you start at the quarterback position with New England's Tom Brady and Peyton Manning of Indy. Tom Brady, though, says this game is much more than just the quarterbacks.
It's two football teams who play a lot. It was fun. We were part of the same division, and over the years we've had plenty of our most critical games against them.
Manning says he watches the Patriots' offense on film and learns a lot.
We end up watching a lot of tape at the Patriots' offense because we play, you know, so many common opponents. And obviously, it's a great film to study because you always want to see how a defense, how they play against the Patriots and how they try to stop, you know, Tom and their passing game. So you certainly, you know, see him a lot on film and, you know, have throughout the years. And he's playing great again this year, without a doubt.
The two teams have been remarkable in their similarities throughout the first decade of the 21st century. Both teams have 109 wins, just 4 shy of San Francisco's mark in the 1990s. And both teams are 83-21 in the regular season since 2003. I'm Mike Petrelia, Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, you want to talk about the similarities. Manning and Brady even had similar staph infections in their knees following their surgeries in 2008. But you know what's remarkable about this whole thing to me is that in these head-to-head matchups, Brady is 6-3 against Manning. Brady has 3 rings. Manning has 1. Yet Manning has the 3 MVPs. Brady only has 1. Obviously, these guys know each other pretty well, and this matchup seems to define the season every year.
Yeah, absolutely. New England and Indianapolis, that's the headliner on Week 10 of this NFL campaign, and it should be a great one. Time now for the Handicapper's Corner with Chuck Esposito, casino manager, race and sports for the Tropicana, Las Vegas.
Hey, Chuck, this is Hub. Great to talk to you again this week. And I want to take you right back to this Patriots matchup with the Colts. And also, let's throw in the Steelers and the Bengals. Does the magnitude of games like this tend to skew the line at all? And does it create more action or maybe less?
No, I think it creates more, Hub. When you have some marquee matchups across the board, it definitely generates a lot of buzz in the sports book, a lot of action. A lot of people want to see those games, and especially that marquee Sunday night game between the Patriots and the Colts. But I think it's a much bigger game to the Patriots if you're talking about playoff implications and home field advantage, sitting at 6-2 while the Colts are 8-0.
When you try and come up with these numbers, and I'm guessing that that one wasn't all that difficult because you're going to throw in the three for the home field, and other than that,
correct,
these teams are so close. But do common opponents come into play at all? Because when you look at how these teams have gotten to 8-0 and 6-2, it strikes me that maybe the Patriots have had a little rougher road.
They definitely had a rough road, and that is something that we'll look at. We'll look at strength of schedule. We'll look at how the teams have played in their last couple of weeks, common opponents, injuries. We try to factor all that in and put up a number, as we've discussed in the past, that we think will draw good two-way action. But you're right, in this case it was very easy. A three seemed to be a great number, yet you're seeing a lot of one-sided action right now in the Patriots, and I think this game's going to close at lower than three, probably 2.5 or 2 in favor of the Colts.
One other quick question for you, Chuck. Obviously the Pittsburgh Steelers are the defending world champs and playing like it. Are people sleeping on the Cincinnati Bengals a little bit? I certainly never saw them sitting here at 6-2, and it's not even the record so much as the way they're winning these games and the fact that they already beat the Steelers.
Right, a lot of non-believers right now. The Bengals come off, they've won twice against the Ravens, yet people still don't believe them. They remember the last thing they see in many cases. You saw the Steelers look so impressive, especially on the defensive side of the ball Monday night against the Broncos. And they're a 7-point favorite at home. Little revenge on the Steelers' side here. And this game is a huge game in the AFC North for playoff implications as well.
Chuck, thank you very much. Chuck Esposito in the Handicapper's Corner. Stay tuned. We've got the Publisher's Pen up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, every year during the NFL season about this time, it seems like we get a slate of games and a day where it is truly moving day in the NFL. And when you look at this weekend's schedule, I think we're going to get a much clearer picture at what we're looking at the last couple weeks and come playoff time. Everybody knows how huge Indianapolis and New England is, but let's face it, most likely both of those teams see some postseason action. But you look at that Pittsburgh-Cincinnati game, can the Bengals sweep the Steelers and the Ravens? If they do, suddenly you got the defending world champs looking like like a wild card team. And then look at Atlanta and Carolina. Can the Falcons make a statement? They've got to beat the Panthers. And if Carolina loses, it's all over. Philadelphia and San Diego, they were my preseason Super Bowl picks. Could they both be out of the playoff chase? Well, one of them's in trouble after this Sunday. And then we've got the Packers and Cowboys, a must-win situation for the Packers. Can Dallas take control of the NFC? This is as important a weekend as we've had so far in the NFL.
All right, Hub, thanks very much. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Dallas Cowboys and San Diego Chargers Radio Networks. The executive coordinating producer, Pro Football Weekly, is Randy Meyer. Dave Olson is our engineer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee.